This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Game 2, NBA Final, later tonight in Oakland at the Oracle. Warriors trying to grab a commanding 2-0 lead. And if they do, they're going to be real good shape for this series. I've given you some of the numbers. Off what they did in Game 1, they're a big favorite going into tonight. And, well, they should be. Can the Cavs get this series back to a manageable margin? Here to give us some insight on that, you catch him on NBA TV from down there in Hotlanta. Also, if you're a baseball fan, you know him from Inside Pitch on SiriusXM's MLB Network Radio on a day-in, day-out basis. Our buddy Casey Stern ops aboard. How are you, Case?
What up, Julie Mack? How we doing, buddy?
Probably better than the Cavs, digging out a bit of a hole after game number one. You knew the Warriors were going to come out pumped up. You just had to get a gauge on them whether 9 days off was going to be a deterrent, whether it'd be more rust than rest. Apparently, the rust did them well because they looked dynamite. Sometimes with teams, you don't know which way it's going to go. Who should be getting credit for the Warriors coming out and being as top of their game as they were game one?
Well, I think they should be getting credit. I think, you know, as people want to look at how sluggish the Cavaliers were, considering they turned the ball over 20 times, comparatively to 4, which also means not only did they turn it over, but they didn't force any either. I think this is about the Warriors. And, you know, in talking to people around the arena during the media availability the day before game one and then into game one, really everybody was discussing just how long this team has been waiting to get to this moment. They've waited all year, really, regardless. And, you know, I'm not trying to sit there and discount the entire Western Conference, but let's discount it. They were waiting for this moment. I had somebody who is very close to Steve Kerr tell me that there were texts from players back and forth during the course of the entire year about the fact that they knew they wanted to beat the Cavaliers and make up for what they did. Draymond Green, because of the suspension last year in Game 5. Obviously, Steph Curry, who either wasn't healthy, didn't play well, or both in Games 5, 6, and 7 of that series. And, you know, to me, I think the credit also goes to the gap between the two teams. I've been saying this throughout the course of the year. As much as people talk about the gap between these two and everyone else, there's a gap between these two teams. The Warriors almost swept the Cavaliers last year and added the second-best player in the game. I don't know what will happen in this series, but in terms of teams, there's not even a close comparison between these two, in my opinion. It's LeBron and the Cavs against the way better team, in my opinion, in Golden State.
There is a chance that Steve Kerr returns to the sidelines tonight. I don't think we're going to know until within an hour of the game, and shoot, we might not even know 20 minutes before the game because the Warriors don't want to tell us. They don't need to tell us, and they'll handle it how they see fit. I'm a huge Steve Kerr fan. I think that it was an unbelievably tremendous hire when they brought him in, and he's done absolutely everything right since he's taken over that franchise. Haven't missed a beat with Mr. Kerr off the sidelines. Should Mike Brown be getting credit for that? Should Kerr be getting credit for that he has his assistants ready to step in and go? We've seen a couple of examples of it since he's taken over. Or should the players be getting credit because they're just that good, just that in tune, that it doesn't matter who's sitting on the sidelines?
Well, you know, I don't. Clearly we know it's not the last part, but I want to start there because people need to understand that in the history of the NBA, this is the most dominant playoff run any team has ever had in terms of the differential between what they have scored and their opponent. The Warriors came in here almost 17-point victors per game in the 12 in that sweep. So we haven't had many decisions for Mike Brown to make. Really, it's been rotations and things of that sort. There have been, you know, the out-of-bounds plays we saw from Brad Stevens in the series against Cleveland. Other than the first half where Kawhi was in there in game one, there wasn't any point of any game where, Jody, they were even, you know, close. It was contentious. So, you know, I'm not trying to take away from Mike Brown, but let's understand that just like managers in baseball, we can blame guys for everything, but it comes down to individual impact moments in October in that sport. And in this sport, it's the same thing. We haven't had any of those moments with this team yet. I give the players the most credit, though, for this reason. Talking to people around the NBA over the course of the year, the one thing more than anything else people marvel at is not the talent of this team, but it's how unselfish they are. You know, Klay Thompson is a guy who is going to eventually, and he's got one more year, go to another team, and he is going to be a 25 to 30-point scorer for some other team as their number one guy. The guy is the second or third best pure shooter in the game, but now he doesn't take many shots. I mean, clearly he's tried to take too many to get back into a rhythm. But, you know, Draymond Green, who could certainly be doing more, the fact that Durant and Curry have really acquiesced to each other. You go back to the first quarter of game one, that team was clearly trying to get KD into the flow, and that's with a guy who's won two MVPs at the point. So I just think for me, the unselfish nature of the team, Jody, they understand each other so well. They know where they're going to be on the court, and I don't think they necessarily need that much coaching until you get to those final moments. And I'll just tack this quick one on. The worst game of the year that I saw the Warriors play, they blew a 23-point lead against Memphis. And that was the game where in the last minute of the game, Kevin Durant and Draymond Green got into an argument on the floor. It was because nobody knew who was supposed to take the last shot. They have not been in a situation like that the entire season since. If they get into a game where there's 30 seconds left and there's an out-of-bounds play, it will be the first play of that nature with Durant and Curry on the floor in months.
And if Steve Kerr is there, I don't think anyone will second-guess this decision he makes and who he calls the number of. If it's Mike Brown, it could get interesting. That's an excellent point that you bring to the table. Casey Stern here with us on CBS Sports Radio. LeBron James, game one. Most times when you go 28 points, 15 boards, and 8 assists, that's looked at as a pretty damn good night.
You got that right.
But he had that one other column with 8 turnovers, which kind of stuck out like a sore thumb for LeBron. And I don't think anyone would argue, even the biggest LeBron defenders, that he tried to force some things. And he made some mistakes and some costly turnovers in that mix. What does he do to take that specific column down a couple of notches from 8 turnovers to whatever he can get it down to?
Well, two things. He needs to trust his teammates more. And, Jody, they need to do more. I mean, look, I'm a Jordan over LeBron guy, but I am definitely a LeBron is in the top 3 or 4 of any player ever guy. And that's going to continue to climb. I mean, the guy is he's a freak of nature. But I don't think people really give enough credit for how much he will have to do. He knows. And look, this is one of the things about LeBron that I think anybody should admire. This guy is like a Tom Brady in terms of when you talk to him or you hear him in press conferences, the way he breaks down everything that every guy is doing on the floor on both teams. He knows that he has to play out of his mind to win this series. So I think he tried to do too much. And they need way more help. Tristan Thompson was invisible. They didn't get the game from Kevin Love. I know he took down, I think, 20-plus boards, but they need him to score just like he was doing in the Celtics series. They're going to need JR or Shumpert or Korver and Darren Williams. And Korver and Darren Williams, by the way, their first final game for both had a total of 0.0 for 7. They need more. This is not a good enough team to have Kyrie and LeBron go take on the Golden State Warriors. It's just not. So I think it's a combination of two things. One, yes, tried to do too much because I think he knows he needs to have a monster series for them to have any chance. And two, the other part is he's got to get more help from that supporting cast. The more he can trust those guys, the less I think he'll force it.
You mentioned you were out there before game one. So in the house, the Oracle is one of the best places in the NBA to play. It's old. It's been there forever. They're building this new arena in San Francisco, which is just going to not only give them new and luxury facility and everything else, it's going to change the vibe as well because Oakland and San Francisco are two different towns and two different groups. You've been to a lot of different NBA venues, a lot of different towns. How good is the Oracle compared to every other arena in the NBA?
It's the best environment. And I think the two best environments in the two sports, yeah, look, we love both sports, but every sport, but the two that I cover predominantly, I think are both in the same town because I think San Francisco with the Giants is the best as well. But it is amazing. And it's funny because, you know, a lot of times we'll watch, you know, a bunch of us will sit there because we wait to do our post game after on the court. So we watch in the green room and everybody's, you know, having conversations and whatnot. But we had some media seats and I went out there just for a little bit just to kind of soak up what it was like. It's unbelievable. It's hard to explain what it's like necessarily because the vibe is, for me, I hate when you go to arenas and you've got to kind of tell people to stand up and you've got all that kind of, to me, that cheap kind of, I got to beg people to understand how the game is. These people know the game. They're on fire from second number one. You know, they were freaking out when Steph Curry does his practice routine and he takes that last shot before he walks into the tunnel. He sometimes hits it, sometimes not. He hit the shot, and you would have thought there was a game going on. I turned around and didn't know what was happening because it was louder than you will get in Brooklyn to see a Nets game during the fourth quarter, and that was during the pregame. So it's a special environment, and again, for the Bay Area, got to give them credit. I think the Giants at AT&T Park and the Warriors at Oracle are each in those respective sports the best environments.
All right. If the Cavs are to find a way to win the game tonight, get this to 1-1, the one thing unquestioned that they must accomplish tonight or eliminate tonight from something that happened in game one, what's the one aspect that must go Cleveland's way if they're going to find a way to win?
Points in the paint. You're not going to beat the Warriors in general unless you play your best game. They're a team we know is going to hit threes. You can't stop them from doing that. But 46 of the 60 first half points they scored, Joe, were points in the paint. And I never seen anything like it. You go back and watch those plays where Durant is running down the middle. The defenders were so afraid of the guys at the three-point line, they were moving away. I mean, I never seen a guy so open in my life. It was like a slam dunk competition. You cannot do that. And I don't know if that was – go back to the coaching. I don't know if that was Ty Lue's plan. I don't know if that was just the way it broke down. They have to fix that. You have to be able to trust the fact that, hey, look, the Cavaliers shot more threes this year than Golden State did. You're going to be able to trade some of those points. You can't let Kevin Durant get six dunks in the first half. And just to kind of tack on to that point, his six dunks in the first half were more than any entire game he played all season. You can't let that happen.
Oh, couldn't agree with you more there. I do have one baseball question for you.
Sure.
I kind of disagree with the San Francisco thing, and I know it's a great stadium and they're
right.
A great fan base, but I'm living and dying with the Cubs these days just think Wrigley Field is still the best. But that's I have a Cub question, but we won't go Wrigley related.
Go ahead. That's all right.
They win the World Series last year, end the 108-year waiting streak. I thought that they were seriously the best team coming into baseball again, and I thought we had a chance for a repeat champion. I never picked my World Series champion. I just picked the two teams that will get there before the season started, and I picked the Cubs again. They don't look like a World Series team at all. Now, in that division, they're only a game out, so it isn't like they're buried, but they sure as hell don't look like the Cub team that won it all last year. I'll give you a couple possibilities. You tell me if I touch on it or if it's something altogether different. Hangover, World Series malaise, the fact that they may have overachieved last year, veterans and or young guys, the young guys that we thought were just going to pick up where they left off, the Schwarbers and the Baez of the world haven't been able to do that. The Fowler and Ross leaving the squad, veteran guys who were there before, leaders and commanded that kind of presence in the clubhouse, now missing, has left a hole. What's the biggest reason why the Cubs are pedestrian at this point?
Well, I'll tell you this. You and I are in the same boat, and I picked the Cubs to play the Astros in the World Series. And I'll be honest with you, I've been wrong in some way about both because I thought Houston would get there. I didn't think they'd be by far the most dominant team in the American League, at least to this point. I think it's everything you said except for the overachieving. I'm not buying that. Talent is talent. What Kyle Schwarber did after getting like two at-bats in the fall league and then ho-hum in a double off Kluber, Baez and the ability we saw last year, Addison Russell, who's a fantastic talent, to me there's too much ability. So I think that's kids to me more, Jody, that are getting adjusted to, that had too much pressure on them, weren't sure how to handle it. There are a number of things. I mean, I'm not in their heads, but I definitely don't think it's overachieving because their talent's there. The rest of it, I agree with all of it. The Fowler thing, last year, the Cubs' worst stint they played the entire season. They had 1 month in which they actually were under 500. I think it was July. They were 12-14. What was it about that month that was different? That was when Fowler had his injury. So I absolutely buy into that. David Ross, no offense to him, and I love him and his dancing, I don't think so much. But Fowler definitely in that lineup and at the top of the order. I think the pitching of Jake Arrieta, for the most part, has been a problem. It took Hendricks a little bit to get going. I still think this team will get there, but I think there's where I'm surprised, Jody, is they're going to need more work in July than I thought. The one thing that should scare everybody is not only do the Cubs have Theo, but they've got money and they've got prospects. They've even got guys at this level. If they wanted to move a Schwarber and say, hey, you know what, screw it, we got to go, they could do that. So, you know, I think the Cubs will end up fixing it. They'll get another starting pitcher. I think they'll add some glue back into that mix in terms of leadership with a vet or two. And I still wholeheartedly believe that the core and the nucleus is, look, if Lester and Arrieta and Hendricks are at least good versions of themselves, they're going to hit enough, I think, and be young enough with fresh legs in October to do what they did again. So I'm with you. I'm surprised, but I'm not bailing off the bandwagon yet because they got the best executive in the four major sports right now, maybe all time in baseball, and they've got money and prospects to spare. I think they'll fix it in July.
So do I. Case, what time's the pregame stuff start?
We've got everything going on at 6 o'clock on the East Coast, 3 on the West. You know how it is with East Coast, Jody. I don't need tip calculators, but I got to look down at my hand and take notes just so I can make sure, because no one knows where Mountain Time is, so I'm still trying to figure it out.
Always a pleasure, Casey. Thanks, my friend. We shall talk again.
Dude.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.